Okay, I think we'll get going with Joe Natale, the CEO of Rogers Communications. Welcome, Joe.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming this year. Your first year at Rogers.
Yes.
Been an eventful year. Stock's performed very well. No pressure.
We're going to start that way, are we?
Listen, since pretty much your first public comments about Rogers, you've talked about customer service, and you've been very clear that customer service and financial performance are not mutually exclusive. In fact, that they feed on each other. And I was wondering if we could start off our discussion, if you just could flesh out that, because that seems to be one of the big themes you're talking about to the investment community.
Sure. I think customer service is fundamental to our success overall, not just for the obvious reasons that we all think about as customers, but from the point of view of the financial drivers and outcomes that are available because of it. I think to date, Rogers organization has done a good job of going after what I would say is the low-hanging fruit. Things like bill shock around roaming and leading the market with Roam Like Home, things of that nature, data management to help people manage their family data plans. The next push, the next area that I'm really focusing the organization on is looking end-to-end in terms of customer service. I think that's where there's really material opportunity for us. Looking at how what we do in marketing and product development, in our channels, actually drives complexity, drives customer friction, drives quality problems as a result. And my fundamental belief, and I've always held it deep in my heart, is that when you go after customer service, you're actually going after cost. The two go hand in hand. It's actually quite hard to find a customer service initiative that doesn't automatically drive taking costs out of the organization. You heard me say before, Tim, we take about 47 million phone calls a year. I would say there's a tranche of those phone calls that are good phone calls, good for customers, good for us. I would say there is a huge material portion of those phone calls that are the result of upstream issues that have propagated downstream, as I've mentioned, and have caused complexity. And when a phone call costs you $10 per, it's quick to accumulate in terms of what the margin impacts of doing things like that are. So it really becomes a systemic look at how we do business, not just driving churn. Churn is an important factor. Churn certainly has a big impact on our efficiency around cost of acquisition and cost of retention, a very direct correlation around those items. And customer loss is, always a very expensive proposition. But there are other elements in that cycle that are very important. The number of repeat calls, transferred calls, truck rolls that were unnecessary, set-top boxes that failed unnecessarily, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And when you accumulate all those costs in an organization, it can be quite substantial. We believe that we can get anywhere from 100 to 200 basis points of margin improvement in the next 12 to 18 months as a result of just the initial foray into that area. The thing to keep in mind is that it is a constant and relentless journey. It's not something we'll ever sit up here and say, we're done, we've declared success. I've said to my team, the minute you declare success, you've actually failed. And so we're going to really step up those efforts, and already have, for that matter, across the organization.
And it's not a cost initiative, but is there revenue components here, or does that just sort of fall out of more retention of customers?
There are revenue components because there's this interesting and very important turbocharger effect that happens. And excuse the kind of metaphor, but, if we do a better job of retaining customers, that frees up the cost of acquisition that we would have had to spend to maintain the growth of market share that we believe is appropriate for us as a business. And by doing so, we get to reinvest those ideas in other market growth opportunities, other investments, other areas that can drive both top line and bottom line growth.
Okay. Let's maybe move down to some of the operating units and obviously wireless being two-thirds of the company. It seems the performance at Rogers has turned nicely over the last six, 8 quarters and maybe even accelerating. What are you seeing within your base that's driving that?
We're seeing a few things in the base that's really driving it. First and foremost, we're seeing good growth in the marketplace. Canada still sits at about 87% penetration overall, 86-87% penetration versus 117 in the U.S. So we're seeing that advancement more towards North American adoption rates of wireless technology. We're seeing data growth continue to move at a good pace. Data consumption is doubling every 16 to 18 months in our business, and there's a hunger for data like never before. The fact that we have high-quality, capable networks goes hand-in-hand with that data consumption, data appetite as a direct result of it. That's sort of driving the performance, I think, in a big way. I think the team's done a good job of leveraging capabilities across all of our channels and making sure that we're doing a better job in retail, online, et cetera, of driving experience that is both attracting and retaining customers as a whole. There's still lots of growth opportunity in the wireless market. You know, we have been doing very well in terms of attracting prepaid customers. And one question I often get is it worth having all those prepaid customers? Prepaid customers, to me, are a combination of offering affordable plans and opportunities to people that couldn't otherwise afford wireless, but they also offer a graduation point for people from prepaid to postpaid as the circumstances change, as they want to get into a more capable smartphone device, as they want to consume more data. And our ability to convert prepaid customers to postpaid customers has been terrific, another great element that's fueling our growth.
Right. And are you seeing a lot of migration between the Fido and the Rogers brands, or are your segments relatively stable within those two?
They're relatively stable. We see some migration. We watch it very, very carefully. A conversation that I've been driving in the last few months is what is the true delineation between Rogers, Fido, and Chatter? And what are the value propositions of each? What are the customer segments we're addressing? And they clearly have very different customer segments, but there are always there's always a group of people in the marketplace that will look at the various brands and try to figure out where is the best place for them to be. The key for us is to make sure that we can drive the right economic and financial outcomes regardless of what brand platform they might be on. The Fido brand, as an example, has very strong and healthy margins. And I want to be indifferent in terms of looking at those boundaries between the brands as to where a customer may land, because they may land on one side or the other. But if I get to keep them as a customer and get to drive their appetite for data and get to drive good margins, then I have the best of both worlds.
Okay. The U.S. market has evolved, obviously completely different structure, but, you know, there's been the evolution of a couple of dynamics there, one being equipment installment plans and obviously unlimited plans. Is there any scenario you could see that Rogers would approach either of those two items?
We have no plans and no desire to drive forward with equipment installment plans. We think we have a very strong, vibrant set of circumstances for people to acquire handsets at affordable prices and manage their migration to a new handset, whether it means handing it down to someone else in their family as that handset gets older, or re-upping when their handset balance has been has declined to a point where they want to renew. I think that whole structure works very, very well in our marketplace, and we have no desire to move forward with installment plans. I don't see the real value or benefit of that. And, Canadians, in terms of smartphone penetration, we're amongst the highest in the world. So clearly, with the capabilities of our networks and the overall flexibility, availability of rate plans and constructs around smartphone adoption, the market's working really well. On unlimited, if you look across our customer base, we have customers that use small amounts of data, large amounts of data. Unlimited is a bit of a one-size-fits-all. And unlimited very quickly leads to a deterioration of overall network performance because of the natural growth. And there's no real such thing as true unlimited. Even in the U.S. market, there's throttling at a certain point because otherwise it leads to a degree of network degradation that actually falls off the whole promise of quality and capability. And we've worked hard to create a suite of plans that offer data consumption at the various places along the spectrum, from low consumption to high consumption, depending on people's individual needs, but also an environment that creates robust economic returns so that we can continue to reinvest in networks. And we're headed into 5G. 5G will bring all kinds of incredible capability in our digital age for the next generation of wireless. It's important that we as Canada have led on networks, have led globally in the history of 3G and 4G. It's important to have the right economic preconditions for us to make investments in 5G that will continue to perpetuate that leadership and capability and to drive a great experience for our customers.
Sticking with the industry structure, you have a network sharing agreement with Videotron, and there's been some speculation in the investment community that the conditions will evolve where there'll be something to do with Shaw. Can you talk about your philosophy with respect to network sharing and how Videotron has benefited you, and then any comment you'd have on the potential for something with Shaw?
So we're open to network sharing ideas as long as there is a great symmetrical opportunity and there's benefit to the Rogers organization. We feel that the Videotron deal is one that has helped us support greater capability in the province of Quebec, and we're happy with that deal. Are we open to other deals? We're always open to other deals. We don't need to rely upon them, nor are they important to our success. And we'll look at them on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, fair enough. Let's go back to 5G. You mentioned how it's going to open up some potential new markets. Your predecessor stated Rogers sort of planning for 5G as, I'm paraphrasing, but that really you were going to leverage Vodafone. And I'm just curious if your views are radically different than that in terms of deploying resources or capital for 5G, or is it still too early?
Let me start by saying I think 5G will be, as I mentioned a minute ago, very exciting for us. It will usher in a brand new set of capabilities that today are unimaginable for consumers and for businesses as a whole. Whether that's driven by very low latency in the network, whether that's driven by incredible battery life for low power consumption devices that really sparks IoT to the next place, whether it's driven by the ability to truly segment traffic in very creative ways so that we can offer not just ultra high speeds, but the ability to download incredible content at a push of a button. Let's say you're on the way to the airport, Tim, and you've forgotten to put some movies on your iPad. On a push of a button, you might be able to download, five movies instantaneously given the speed boost we can offer through 5G. So there's all these sort of very cool, I would say almost theoretical use cases out there. But they are that at this point in time. They're cool and theoretical. The reality of 5G right now is that we are pre-technology in terms of timing. We are pre-standards in terms of 5G standards overall. And the use cases for Canadian demographics and geography haven't really been settled on as a whole. At the end of the day, Our collective business in Canada amongst all the players in wireless is maybe, you know, a few percentage points of the global wireless economy. Our job as Canadian leaders of the wireless industry is to see what is happening out there in the world by the very large players who are making investments in 5G, Vodafone and others. I would say focus more heavily on some of the North American use cases and drive for 5G that's happening, and really kind of assimilate, collect the ideas, and really try to rationalize in a very practical, economic way what makes sense for Canada. Everything you're seeing right now around 5G is really in the realm of what I would call press releases and press release trials. Good to stimulate conversation around 5G, but I've said to my team, let's stay close to the large players. We've got great relationship with them. Let's participate in some real technology trials when the time comes, and let's really nail down what are the use cases. And then we'll do this in a proper evolutionary way. I don't think that 5G is going to be a big rip and replace. In fact, the work that we're doing now and we'll be doing for the short to medium term is really kind of bedding down what I would call a 4.5G capability, which will be the foundation of 5G, no matter what 5G evolves into. And that would include ideas like 4-carrier aggregation. That would include things like 4x4 MIMO. That would include things like 256 QAM capabilities, all these new technological platforms that really are a great stepping stone towards 5G. I believe we're at a very important part of the technology performance versus cost curve. Some of our competitors have deployed some of these technologies already. We are just in the midst of driving hard on this set of technologies. What we're finding is that the vendor market, the OEM market providing equipment and capabilities, is sufficiently more mature than it was even a short while ago, that we're getting better spectral efficiency and better unit costs as a result. And, you know, those are the types of investments that we will make in the short to medium term. That's the reason why we've been saying that you'll see our wireless CapEx intensity index up more towards being in line with our peers. And then we'll keep a watchful eye on 5G and take a very evolutionary approach on it.
One of the takeaways from that, though, is that the performance characteristics of 4G as it exists today continue to improve. So,
absolutely.
So investors should expect a long run of the current platform. Is that fair to say?
A very long run of the current platform. You know, we were the first in Canada to launch LTE back in 2011. We were the first to launch carrier aggregation a few years ago. The market has embraced LTE, 4G, 4.5G technology, and we all face the same focus on, you know, return on invested capital, the same focus on sweating the assets we have. There's not an automatic love affair to kind of just switch technology horses for the sake of switching. The business case needs to be there. In the meanwhile, we're going to sweat these assets for a long time to come.
And
the smart 5G players out there that are developing technology are developing it such that it actually is more of an evolutionary overlay on the 4.5G versus, as I said, a rip and replace, which I think is the right economic approach to the equation.
And how important is the 600 megahertz spectrum and upcoming auction your roadmap?
Spectrum is important. It's the lifeblood of our industry. Without spectrum, we have nothing. So we're going to pitch up, as you would imagine, we pitch up for 600. 600 is going to have some great propagation qualities, in building penetration qualities, all the things we talked about at length when 700 came out. It's in the same sort of realm overall. There's some time and effort required to unencumber 600, given what it's been used for in the past, and television, et cetera. So we'll be there. I do take issue with the fact that we've got vibrant, capable regional players that are being classified as new entrants and given set-aside opportunities when they're not truly new entrants in the classical sense. They've got very strong balance sheets and long histories and really are as robust a player in the marketplace as any of us that have been in the wireless business longer. So we don't agree with the government's view on set-asides. We'll be making that point through the consultation that's coming up. But nonetheless, the spectrum is important.
One other regulatory item that's coming up is the minister, Minister Baines, asked the CRTC to review the file on MVNOs with respect to Sugar Mobile, mm-hmm. who had an arrangement with Rogers. Can you talk about how you expect that file to proceed, and do you expect there to be changes in the MVNO landscape in Canada?
First of all, it's really hard to predict how that file might proceed. I would say a few things. Canadians enjoy some of the best wireless networks in the world, and we can pull up any stat on, you know, G8, G10 nations with respect to LTE adoption, smartphone adoption, wireless capability, performance of networks, et cetera, and Canada is always leading, always in the first few. And I think it's given us great advantage as a country. I think it's given us great advantage with respect to the ability to provide that capability to kids in school, to startups across the country. We support LTE coverage to 97% of Canadians. Those of us sitting in the center of Toronto right now at First Canadian Place often don't appreciate what it takes to cover cities in the nether regions of Canada. And the fact is we've got some of the best rural coverage available. What's really under debate right now is the extent to which the economics of covering those smaller areas of Canada really fall into play and to what extent they still make economic sense. We as an industry make all of our money in a handful of cities, as you might imagine. The rest of it has really been born out of public policy to make sure with spectrum license that we cover the vast majority of Canadians. I think it was a great move on the part of our government over the last many decades to make sure that all of us are building out to the most extreme, low populated parts of Canada. We're about to embark on 5G. We just talked about the excitement around 5G. That will require another generational investment, more evolutionary in nature, but still a significant investment. I think the economic preconditions for making sure we cover all of Canada with 5G are very important to remain intact, are very important for us as Canadians. And this is our era as Canadians in terms of global advantage. It'd be a shame to kind of turn the clock backwards. If you look at what's transpired in Europe over the last many years with MVNOs, I think you can draw a direct correlation to some of the European markets that have underinvested in wireless networks. And now are regretting it, and now are, rallying a cry to say it's time to step up the investment efforts and change the regulatory conditions whereby players want to invest in places that aren't immediately profitable, may never be profitable for that matter. I do think as well, if the focus is around driving affordability for Canadians, there are some great opportunities to offer low-cost prepaid plans, Wi-Fi first capabilities that already exist and being well utilized by people that want to use those capabilities. Canada has some of the best Wi-Fi capability and coverage of any of the developed nations, whether it exists in gathering places, whether it exists in your local Tim Hortons, et cetera. We've got incredible Wi-Fi coverage, so I'm more than happy to sit down with our leadership in government and really work from the same side of the table and figure out what can we do to drive even greater affordability for Canadians. You know, Rogers was one of the first to step up with this notion of being connected for success and offering internet capability to Canadians who can't afford it otherwise, for school children that live in lower income households. Be happy to step up and figure out how we solve those challenges given the importance of what it means to Canada and being part of this great country, but let's be very careful, very sensitive to the investment thesis that got us here and make sure that we don't destroy it going forward.
Okay. Let's shift over to wireline for a bit, and before we talk about Comcast and the rollout next year, can you provide an update to us on just how the, you know, the almost the battle is going, I guess, against Bell? Because, you know, your numbers suggest even pre-Comcast that you're holding your own on, particularly on internet.
Absolutely. I think we've got a great internet product. I think our broadband capability offers a technological advantage in the medium term. It's a capability that we're very proud of. We have deployed DOCSIS 3.1 across our entire network, and therefore have gigabit-enabled our entire network. Now, as we are successful in moving customers to higher speed tiers, or as they kind of decide to increase their consumption. In Canada right now, the average household has 12 connected devices, and we will continue to drive those efforts, especially with the advent of the X1 platform and the things that come with it around the connected home. We'll continue to drive those efforts as a whole. And therefore, we have the opportunity to add more fiber infrastructure on more of a success basis. We can split nodes and bring fiber deeper into our access infrastructure as we light up communities, as we sell those communities, as opposed to having to rip and replace entire communities to do so. So that advantage is actually working for us right now. The team's done a great job of continuing to drive focus across our entire coverage footprint. Our main competitor for internet has about 25% fiber footprint overlap for us, for example, across our footprint here in Ontario. And we're going to take advantage of that gap in the short to medium term, as I said earlier. The question we are asking ourselves is, you know, we have a very strong cash flow position. We have an economic environment with historically low interest rates. Do we pull forward some of that node splitting, node segmentation now into the present day so we can serve up an environment for the next generation that doesn't have the same capital demands in this time when we have more accessibility to capital? And we're examining that, and we'll take a closer look at that through the, you know, the next number of months, and come back to you with our thoughts around doing exactly that. On the TV front, I think it's fair to say that we've been fighting with one hand tied behind our backs. Our TV platform was once, you know, the shining futuristic platform, and now kind of feels old and archaic. And yes, the interfaces have improved a bit over time. But the advent of X1 will bring a brand new ability to really drive TV to the next place. You've heard me say in the past that, you know, when I got to Rogers, people were wandering around the organization feeling that we were in the ninth inning of the cable TV business. I think we're more like in the third inning of the cable TV business. And the capabilities that will come with our new platform will be, I think, incredibly compelling for our customers, and drive an appeal that has been missing and allow us to fight with both hands, one on broadband and one on TV.
And talk a little bit more about some of the other things that you've talked about with respect to Comcast and the platform in terms of the whole home and other markets you might be going after.
Sure. So the fundamental features of Comcast we all know, whether it's voice-activated search or fully ingesting the Netflix and YouTube search capabilities, et cetera, all things in the interface, all that kind of stuff, which is really, I think, going to hit the market in a very compelling way. But what's even more exciting is the roadmap that follows behind Xfinity around the connected home. And if you look at the XFi capability that's coming from Comcast, that's on our roadmap, really looks at how do you manage the diversity and complexity of devices in the home and really make home automation something that is accessible and available to anyone, not just the people that can afford to put in sophisticated custom program solutions that we see often in different homes, but have the ability to connect music, lighting, security, et cetera, around universal standards and around self-configuring networks that can automatically recognize those devices and automatically allow you to configure and support and manage those devices. At the same time, the capability that allows you to manage the internet consumption of the household. See which devices are connected, see which devices are consuming what amount of bandwidth. A favorite of my household is turning off your kids' internet connectivity after 8 p.m., which isn't very popular with kids, but important to parents. But all those sorts of ability to manage that Wi-Fi environment, the ability to extend Wi-Fi coverage with self-configuring extenders that work very well, a gateway with an 8-antenna array that will cover most homes in a very comprehensive way, a security home security capability that is centered on iControl, the same home security platform that we have, that will be fully integrated into that environment. So when you add all these up, there's actually a very exciting, robust roadmap that will actually allow us to extend our capability far beyond video entertainment into the broad connected home around all those different areas. And it'll help leverage our strength of distribution because our stores will become a place to come and understand and experience some of those ideas and technologies. And I think it'll give us a lot more to talk about in the marketplace.
Okay. Look forward to that. Is there any questions from the floor? Got one here with Craig.
Hi, Craig.
Just a very simple question.
Sure.
I hear everything you're saying on all the additional functionality that you're offering your customers, but are you seeing a fatigue in the amount of the bill the customer is willing to pay Rogers, or do you just see that continuing to go up?
That's a great question. I think it all hinges on the extent to which service is mission-critical for our lives. And you just look at broadband connectivity and what it means to households, and the level of consumption that has been prevalent in our society the last decade or so. With that comes the understanding and acceptance that it's going to be an even bigger proportion of our wallet, of our discretionary expenditure. I use the example of, remember the ice storm we had a few years ago? It was over the Christmas holidays. In my house, I was worried about the fact that we had 20 people coming over for dinner and all the food was going to thaw, and my kids are losing their minds because there was no Wi-Fi. And so there's a different relationship with some of these services than we had a while ago. The wireless phone in our pockets has become the remote control for your life, and therefore is credited with even more essential characteristics than would otherwise be the case. So it's a question of making sure that the value stays intact and the value proposition is completely communicated. Then I'll bring it back to customer service. The customer service has to be exceptional, right? This new world of connected devices cannot come with friction that's beyond belief. It cannot come with incessant phone calls around devices that don't work or don't operate. It can't come with truck rolls that force people to be home more often, et cetera. One of the advantages of the roadmap that we're on is really heading towards more of a self-serve environment, with far less expensive CPE as a result. In the current world, an installation costs us about $1,000. In the new world, we believe it'll be 60% less than that if we can really deliver on the promise of self-serve and simple capability. The set-top box for Xfinity is a puck about this big that is Wi-Fi connected and that is very easy to install. All right? Gone will be the days of this big clunky set-top box with a whirring drive in it that requires a technician to even examine what it's doing. What has to go hand in hand with the capability is the telemetry look inside the house and diagnose proactively what's happening before the customer's even noticed. So if we can get to that frictionless place with compelling value, I think we will justify the share of wallet that we're addressing.
All right. I think we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you, Joe. Thanks for coming.
Thanks, Tim. Always a pleasure.